Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to show 166, An Engaging Leader is a Flexible Leader. Today we're going to be talking about research by Towers Watson, Gallup and others that shows that creating an actively engaged workforce requires agile and flexible leadership strategies, objectives and behaviours. I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm a social engagement consultant working with the Engage Success movement, leading on digital. The Engage Success movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there's a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. We spread the word about employee engagement and shine a light on good practice, widely supported across the UK, involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engagesuccess.org, you can use the link at the top of the page to get onto our newsletter list. We send a weekly newsletter out, usually on a Friday. If you tweet, share your thoughts using the hashtag #E4S with the number 4 to join in the conversation, and come and join us in our LinkedIn group or on Yammer. If you go to engagesuccess.org/Yammer, you can get a request to get into that group as well. So all our social media links are at the top of our homepage on the website. And if you enjoy listening to the shows, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to go to our iTunes profile. Just go into iTunes and search for Engage Success and give us a rating. That would be really helpful. And don't forget that we've got our conference coming up later this year on the 17th of October. So if you haven't got your tickets for that, then we've still got our early bird pricing. So do go along and register for that. And you just need to go to engagesuccess.org/2016conference. And further details are available on the website. So today I'm pleased to introduce my guest, who is Mark Huggins, owner and managing director of Mark Huggins Coaching and Corporate Drama. So, hello Mark, great to have you with me.
Hello Jo, hello everybody, nice to be here.
Lovely, so start by telling us a bit about who you are and what you do.
As you say, I'm managing director of Mark Huggins Coaching and Corporate Drama, and we're an organization that helps business people develop the awareness around behavior and relationship skills to create the very best places to work. And we do this by bringing our skills as professional actors, but also we have a sort of a hidden additional USP, which is the fact that we've all enjoyed business careers, so we understand the cultural environment that people have to work in, and then we use our acting skills to help create environments where people can practice in really, really believable situations and develop new skills and confidence.
And you said you've all enjoyed business careers, so did you all enjoy it all the time?
Well, it's really interesting, and it's interesting. That's a good point. And it's interesting what we're talking about today around leadership and engagement, because one of my first experiences was in retail management. At the tender age of 21, I was the youngest manager that Argos had ever employed. And in their wisdom, Argos decided to place me in a showroom which had an assistant manager who had gone for my role, didn't get it, and couldn't understand why suddenly this young whippersnapper, fresh from the induction at in Edgware at Argos GHQ, suddenly was coming in and leading the business. And she made it her mission to try and make my life utter hell. And to an extent, she succeeded. So it was a great life lesson for me in leadership and management, and one that I still draw on to this day. So, not always enjoyable, but every member of my team has that muscle memory of what it's like to work in an organization. And that means that what we bring to our programs is that awareness. And it makes it so much more real when we're exploring behaviors in different situations.
Yes. Thank you. Lovely. So tell us a bit about the research then by the Gallup organization. What is it and why is it so compelling?
Well, yeah. And back in 2012, Gallup did a survey. I'm sure most of the listeners will understand when we say Gallup. They're the people that often are reporting activity around elections and such like. They're a trusted organization around surveying and polls. And they did a poll of leading organizations, and they concluded from that research that 82% of the time, organizations either hire or promote people into management and leadership positions who are technically capable and yet have little or no man management capability or experience. And that statistic, when I came across it a couple of years ago, I found incredibly compelling, particularly when we come to approach organizations to help them develop their managers and leaders through their management capabilities. And we see this echoed a lot in the organizations we work with.
It's interesting you say that, actually. It just reminded me of a discussion I had on a workshop I was on a while ago, and it was somebody from one of the police organizations, and she was lamenting the fact that in that particular one, I don't know, I can't remember where it was, you couldn't actually go on any training, management training, leadership training, until you'd actually physically been promoted into a management position, which sort of backs up what you're saying, although you just can't imagine that, you can see why organisations promote people because they're good at their job and they think they'll therefore be a good manager, which I'm sure we'll go on to explore as far as whether that's true or not. but the fact that they actively don't let them do any leadership training until they're physically appointed as a leader. And you think, well, how can they decide who those leaders are going to be when they haven't even seen them in the role and they haven't developed them in any way?
Exactly, yes. And, of course, if you apply that technical awareness around so somebody's very, very comfortable in the technical elements of their role, the likelihood is they're, with the best of intentions, they're going to apply some of that technical expertise into managing people, because quite rightly they're going to make the connection to think, well, this is the process that we use for doing whatever it is we do as a business. If I just take some of that logic and just apply that to managing people, that should be all right. And so you can understand why people might, with the best of intentions, come at it from that angle. And yet when you start to look at why people are more likely to be engaged within their roles, and certainly what is likely to turn people off from being engaged, actively disengaged, having an awareness of what makes not only what makes you tick, but what makes other people tick within your team is vital if you're to be an effective, flexible, and the word I use a lot is authentic leader, because this isn't about, as the Americans would say, a cookie cutter approach where everybody adopts the same behavior, and it's not one size fits all. It is very much about flexibility, and those leaders that are really capable, and those leaders that really engage their people, understand that and have that confidence and awareness around their flexibility of approach. And that again is something that really fascinates me in terms of how people choose to deploy their authentic leadership skills, where it works for them and sometimes where it doesn't work for them.
Yeah. And we talked at the beginning about the research by Towers Watson as well on leadership and engagement. Does that connect up with that too?
Well, yes, because in 2012 as well, Towers Watson did a global workforce study, and in that study they identified that just 27% of UK employees were highly engaged. Now, the global average was 35%. If we take the Gallup organization's results of 82% of the time organizations hire or promote people who are technically capable, and then we look at the Towers Watson evidence around levels of engagement, I think it's very easy to connect those two pieces of data together. If you've got people who are technically capable in a role but don't understand how to motivate and manage and lead people effectively, you are inevitably going to get lower levels of engagement. So I think there's a connection between those two statistics.
And there must be that whole thing around not empowering people and doing sort of too much micromanagement if you're the technical expert as well as the manager. Sometimes you have managers who have very little technical experience but actually very good managers, and it's easier for them to do that because they're not getting bogged down in that technical detail.
Which, you know, that's very interesting, because one of the key areas that we often come up against on our programs when we ask managers, what are the skills that you would like to learn and practice that will enable you to be better in your role? And often coaching comes up as the number one request. And it's really interesting to note that what people's perception of coaching, effective coaching, really is. And we have some very interesting conversations around the breadth of coaching. From one extreme, you've got mentoring. So that's very much leading by explanation and empowering somebody through you, the manager or the leader, explaining what should be done. And then you've got on the other end of the spectrum, you've got almost pure coaching, which is about enabling that person to discover themselves what the solution might be. And it's interesting how often there's a real lack of clarity around what good coaching looks like. And again, I come back to the point that I made earlier on about what authentic coaching is like, because everybody will have a slightly different approach at it. And the most important thing is to raise your level of awareness and confidence around when you are effectively coaching. And what that looks like and what that feels like. So, it's fascinating when you start to get into organizations and start to see how managers and leaders have survived up until this point, reliant upon skills that they may possibly have just been on the receiving end from a previous manager. And they thought, well, that seems to work for him or her. I'll try that. Oh yeah, that kind of feels okay. And they've just adopted that style because they just saw somebody else do it. Our approach is very much around you finding, again, the authentic approach, the one that really resonates with you and feels like it's genuinely you.
Yeah. So when we talk about the four enablers within the movement, the second one, if we take them in the same order as I normally do, is around engaging managers. And we talk about the manager being able to help their employee to be able to see the connection between what they're doing on a daily basis and the objectives of the organisation, and also to treat them as an individual. And we also talk about them coaching, and obviously that's what we're talking about. And, you know, we talk about coaching on a regular basis. Now, regular could be once a year, which may not be good enough. So what would you say about coaching and how frequent it should be and in what situation?
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting topic. And again, often the perception is that a coaching conversation should be one that is maybe held around a more formal appraisal activity. So in some organizations, you have a formal 6-monthly appraisal, and then you have a year-end conversation, often linked to either salary or bonus results as well, dependent upon the organization, of course. But sometimes these coaching conversations are seen as sort of special occasions through the year, which when I put myself into the position of the employee that is on the receiving end of those types of conversation, it must seem a little bit like sort of birthday and Christmas. Why am I suddenly getting this special treatment, you know, one day a year when it's my birthday and one day a year when it's Christmas? And so what we like to encourage, again, back to this idea of a flexible approach, is to build up people's confidence so that they can lead and manage and be flexible and adaptable, to be able to see opportunities where they can coach really, really quickly. I mean, we often talk about, you know, the conversation between the lift at the beginning of the day. You bump into one of your team and you think, and they maybe they've got a problem or a challenge or whatever, or there's been some feedback that's come from a customer, and you've still got an opportunity to coach that individual as you walk from the lift to where your respective desks are. So it can be done in a very agile way. The challenge always, and I think this is part of why it's often on the top of the development list for so many of the program participants that we meet, is because people just don't understand how to take the theory of coaching and to make it authentic and pragmatic to fit their day-to-day lives as a manager or leader. And I think that's the key thing here, is so you understand the theory, then you understand where you can start to apply it. And then if you practice that in a safe environment, then there's a much greater likelihood of you then deploying those skills and behaviors with total confidence when you're back in the workplace.
Now, I guess the really good managers who just coach naturally have just had that opportunity and that practice over a period of time, and then can just work out when it's appropriate and how to do it. You just sort of imagine, fairly new managers having to quite clearly think, you know, this is an opportunity. Now, what did my trainer tell me I need to do next?
Mm.
Or something, which is harder, isn't it, to then get that practice because it doesn't come so naturally. Are there natural coach leaders, you know, leaders who just naturally know what to do at the right time without needing that training?
If there are out there, I haven't met them so far. I do meet a lot of very, very skilled people. But inevitably there are areas of what they do that maybe even they're not quite so clear around how effective they are. They perceive that they're being effective, but they've never had that luxury of the opportunity of someone giving them that feedback that says, when you did this, this is how I was left thinking and feeling. And that's why what we do and our approach is so valuable to program participants, is because you get the feedback that you rarely ever get in real life, which is, as I've just demonstrated. And just the point that you've just made, Joe, actually made me smile because, again, another frequent question asked on leadership programs that we run is, are leaders born or can they be, you know, developed and made? And my answer is always, you can always develop into a leader. I think there are history would indicate that maybe there are one or two leaders that appear to have been very, very natural. I mean, Ernest Shackleton is the one that often comes to mind as being somebody who was incredibly flexible, and that enabled him to take his entire party off the ice cap where their ship had become trapped and get everybody off completely successfully, and that was due to his ability to be flexible. However, if you delve into Shackleton's past, he was actually part of some of the earlier Scott expeditions, and Scott ran, who was an ex-military man, ran his team very much in the command or control style. And it's my belief that actually what happened was that Shackleton experienced that command and control and thought, well, I don't like that, and I'm not going to apply that to the people that I lead and manage, so I'm going to take a different approach. So even his choice was built on experience. So, so there was an element of him developing his own authentic style through having a negative experience. So, I'm not too sure that they are genuinely born. I think it is born out of experience and where you're lucky enough to get that feedback to help you make informed decisions about how you then go about deploying your behavior as a leader moving forward in different situations.
Yeah, and I guess even as children, sometimes feedback about your leadership is the results that you get or don't get as a result of asking someone to do something or encouraging somebody to do something. So it's feedback all along. So I can see that experience development thing. So talking of history, that's a very nice segue for me. You gave a very different presentation on leadership at the Engage or Bust conference last year, so the Engage for Success conference in the autumn, using Shakespeare's Henry V. And in that session, you talked about authentic leadership and emotional intelligence. Tell us more about that.
For me, again, that's a great example of, and the reason I chose it for the conference is that speech at Agincourt that Henry gives is interesting as a leadership piece of communication for a number of reasons. One is the way in which Henry builds rapport with his troops, how he even though he is king, he uses his language and his emotional intelligence to share with his troops his view of the world. What I think is really interesting about Henry's approach is I believe Henry was an emotionally intelligent leader. That is, he understood what made himself tick. He understood what motivated himself and how that shows up in his behavior. But most importantly, he also understood what made other people tick and how to communicate in a way that really resonated with them. So by self-managing himself and by thinking, okay, in this situation, this is how I'm going to communicate, this is how I'm going to motivate and engage my people, I'm more likely to get a willingness and a cooperation. And of course, as we know, the Battle of Agincourt was one of the most famous victories ever in terms of how a small group of extremely weary, ill-equipped soldiers in northern France in October were able to defeat a French army that were fresh, well-equipped, and were eight times the size of the English party.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this idea that by understanding yourself and also understanding others, and then by self-management, deciding on how you're going to behave, how you're going to communicate, that then leads into the successful managing of relationships. And that effectively is the emotional intelligence model that was developed by Daniel Goleman, all those years ago.
Yeah.
And again, this is what we come back to as a motivator for the leaders on the programs that we run, is this idea that if you study that four box model of emotional intelligence, this is the compelling reason why you should consider how you can develop into your own authentic, skilled leader, and understand how that will impact positively on the relationships that you have within your organization. Mm-hmm.
And I guess interesting from a king's point of view that, you know, when they had ultimate power, they didn't need, in lots of cases, or they didn't think they needed to use that emotional intelligence because people would just do what they were told.
I think that's a very interesting point, that so often coercion and a very, very directive leadership style can be chosen because people think in the organization or within their team that actually that's the best way to motivate people. It's just, you know, if you don't do this, this is going to happen. And unfortunately, it's not. There are lots of different other approaches, whether it be pace setting or coaching or participative. There are lots of different leadership styles that you can deploy, some of which may feel more natural than others to you. And again, the way we work on our programs is giving you the opportunity to try the ones that maybe feel less natural. So again, you can gain that confidence. So often leaders think that, oh yeah, I'll tell you once, and then after that, you know, if you cross this line, and it's not always the way to engage people. It's again, it's about understanding others and understanding what motivates them and what makes them tick. And you can do that through observing their behavior. That's the clue, is really listening to other people's behavior, and that those will give you all the clues as to what motivates them, and then informs you as to how you should approach those conversations with those individuals.
Yeah. I can share an example of my own retail background. One of my first roles was with Safeway, the supermarket, and my store manager used to think that everybody was motivated by competition, so he used to challenge me to do something, and I would just go, oh, well, whatever, because it's not competition. I'm not very competitive. It's about recognition for me. You know, had he encouraged me and given me recognition for the stuff that I was achieving, I would have done a lot more. But because he was trying to antagonize me almost into being competitive, that wasn't going to work for me. But he never realized that. Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And I hope as we're talking, I hope that your listeners are thinking maybe of their situations that they've been in where someone has tried to motivate and engage them, and it's completely backfired because they've, as your lovely example of your manager just didn't read your behavior and communication to understand what motivated you, because the clues are all there. You just have to fine tune your listening to be able to pick up on these signals, but also then to understand what the signals mean. And there are just clues out there left, right, and center when you sit and talk to somebody. So it's a fascinating area that we explore in terms of this, being able to understand what makes other people tick.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, my daughter at school, they teach them all about treat others as you would like to be treated yourself. And I always keep saying to her, that's not right. But of course, you know, school is everything to her. So she thinks that, you know, I'm not being very nice. But I keep saying, it's not about how you want to be treated, it's how they want to be treated. So I said, I like what they say, but it's not about you, it's about them.
Yeah.
And that is so true, isn't it?
That's a very, That's a mm-hmm. very popular misconception, and I'm sure, again, your listeners, many of them will have heard that. You know, if you want to go far in this world, treat people the way you like to be treated, and it's the fact, you know, the intent is fantastic, but actually, in practical terms, no, it's totally wrong because, yeah. as you say, people want to be treated the way they want to be treated.
yeah, and that goes then back to our engaging managers and, you know, treating people individually and that whole bringing your whole self to work piece, doesn't it? So
yes, and developing a flexible approach. I can't say that enough.
Yes.
The authenticity is around flexibility. So,
Yes, and exactly. And getting it right for one person doesn't mean that will work for the next person as well. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So we've just got a few more minutes, just sort of into the last 4 minutes of the show. Have you got some top tips for our listeners on becoming an engaging and dynamic, authentic leader? You know, not too difficult. Yes. Just 4 minutes. Off you go.
No. Well, clearly there are lots of things that there are lots of things I could talk about, but the one I'm going to choose is, and it links back to we were talking about coaching earlier on in this radio show, and often people's well-intentioned, I have to stress, it's well-intentioned attempts at coaching are around thinking about asking really, really deep, insightful questions, and often then as the coach you spend a lot of your time actually thinking about what the next question should be, and what you're doing is you're missing out on listening to all the really valuable, rich material that's coming across from your coaching client, your employee.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a concept that I was introduced to a number of years ago, and I think it's absolutely brilliant, and it's called ask the dumb question. And it goes like this: just ask the most simple, obvious question you can think about. A, because it takes up less of your brain time and you can focus more on listening to what the person is saying. And often by asking dumb, simple questions, the person who's being coached doesn't perceive there's any sort of threat involved. They'll just answer it as a simple little question. And often that's where the great pieces of discovery occur. Those aha moments, those light bulb moments of resonance occur in a coaching conversation. So take a leaf out of your child's book. You know, why is the sky blue, mummy? Why is that? Or I was on a train journey into London a couple of weeks ago, and a father and two children were on the train, sat opposite me, and the little boy asked the brilliant dumb question as we approached Marylebone Station through the St. John's Wood Tunnel. He said, "Daddy, why do trains go through tunnels?" And I just sat there thinking, that's a cracking dumb question, you know. And of course, the father immediately broke out in a sweat as he's having to try and think, right, how can I position this so that, you know, a five-year-old boy can understand? Yeah, asking dumb questions is a great way to really get a powerful coaching conversation underway. So that's my big authentic leadership engagement top tip for today.
I love that. And I love the fact that you can then, as you sort of intimated, sit back and actually listen to what's being said, which will enable you to ask other potentially dumb questions rather than panicking about,
listening.
I've got to speak in a minute, what am I going to say? You can actually listen to the person.
Yes, or coming back to my original point at the beginning of this session was about you could then start to think too technically. You could use your technical comfort zone to start applying process to a situation that actually requires leadership and an exploration of behavior that might be the root. Going back to your example of Safeway, you know, you weren't motivated by competition. You were motivated by acknowledgement. So that conversation, mm-hmm. I'm sure, could have gone on a tangent that would only serve the manager. It wouldn't serve you. And this is where the dumb question really comes in. So, for example, if I was coaching you in Safeways, my dumb question, Joe, would be, so, Joe, what motivates you?
Yeah, I can see where that would come in handy.
Yeah.
And how do you ask
that for me as your manager is gold dust, because once I know, if you tell me what motivates you, then boy, oh boy, then I'm on a track that I'm thinking, yep, okay, now all I've got to do is create a relationship where this really resonates with Joe.
Well, that happens, yeah, absolutely. Brilliant, mm. Excellent. On that note, we'll finish because we're just about to run out of time. So that's a really helpful, real top tip for people to take away. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate
you joining
us today. It's been a
pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So just to let you know, next week I'm going to be interviewing Nupa Malik of Tata Consultancy Services about unlocking the secrets of employee engagement. So I'll catch you again next week.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.